Israeli troops would not let her father through a checkpoint to go to a hospital. He suffers from a liver complaint. So this girl went and blew herself up.
The U.S. policies towards the Middle East are completely hijacked by an Israeli agenda.
The Congress has failed in its oversight of the executive branch, and the American people have failed in their oversight of the integrity of our political system.
We have got to warn everybody, because this military-industrial complex and their PNAC and their NORTHCOM plans state that they will carry out the terror, that they will engineer the crises so that they can offer their solution. It's been done throughout history.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Thursday, October 9th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In tonight's special edition of Peace Watch, we'll begin with reaction to one of the top international stories in the news, Israel's bombing of Syria Sunday in response to a suicide attack that killed 19 Israelis over the weekend. We'll also hear a speech by former U.S. Representative Cynthia McKinney, ousted from her congressional seat in Georgia in large part due to the intense Jewish campaign launched against her for McKinney's criticism of Israel's occupation of Palestine. She's speaking at the awards ceremony from this year's Project Censored Awards, where underreported stories are put in the spotlight. The House International Relations Committee voted 33-2 yesterday to impose sanctions against Syria. If the sanctions are signed into law, all U.S. exports to Syria would be barred except for food and medicine. Syrian assets in the United States would also be frozen, and U.S. businesses would be barred from holding investments in Syria. The sanctions are expected to be approved by Congress and the White House. The vote came days after the White House expressed support for Israel's recent bombing of Syria. The attack on Sunday marked the first time Israel attacked Syria in 30 years. Israel claimed the attacks were in retaliation for a suicide bombing that killed 19, but that claim is being challenged. The Syrian interim ambassador, Dr. Imad Mustafa, spoke with Reem Kathuda of Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, D.C., regarding the Israeli attacks and the proposed U.S. sanctions.
This is just yet another example how the Syrian-American relations are actually defined in Israeli terms. What I believe now is that the U.S. policies towards the Middle East are completely hijacked by an Israeli agenda. This new bill, if it will become a law, then it will only cause damage to the Syrian-U.S. relations in general and to the United States' standing in the Arab world. It will not cause particular damage to Syria per se, because we almost have no economic relations with the United States. But it is a very bad example of how the United States is becoming more and more blatantly single-sided. And it's a terrible example of their double standards. Everything they accused Syria of yesterday, and those are accusations, they are not substantiated facts, every single one of them is being practiced by Israel and has been practiced by Israel for years and years, and no sanctions for Israel. The other way around, more and more financial aid, more and more military assistance.
The presence of Syria in Lebanon, isn't that a factor in who put the bill on the floor?
No, I don't think they believe in their heart that Syria's presence in Lebanon is a major issue. It is another pretext. They know that our troops there are there according to the Taif Agreement, and they know that the Lebanese and Syrian governments are having excellent relations and they closely cooperate with each other. Anyone who goes to Lebanon or to Syria can see the difference between what is called Syrian presence in Lebanon and the Israeli occupation. Syrian troops live peacefully among the Lebanese community, and Syrian people go and come to Lebanon, Lebanese in the numbers of thousands cross the borders on daily basis to Syria. When Israel was in Lebanon, life was like hell for them. They were killed on daily basis. They were not even able to move around. And such a difference in comparing Syria's presence in Lebanon to the Israeli occupation of Lebanon is a blatant lie. And yet, when the Israeli army was killing Lebanese on daily basis, those same congressmen were supporting the Israeli occupation of Lebanon. The same congressmen. And it shows you the hypocrisy and the double standards they adopt.
Dr. Imad Mustafa, interim ambassador of the Arab Republic of Syria, responding to the proposal for U.S. sanctions against Syria that were voted out of the House International Relations Committee by a vote of 33-2. The two opposing votes came from Republican Representatives Ron Paul of Texas and Jeff Flake of Arizona. Patrick Seale, a British journalist who has covered the Middle East for over 30 years, paints a different picture than the U.S. government of Syria. Seale was on Democracy Now! Today and said that linking Syria to the attack in Haifa, Israel, is a distraction from the true agenda in the Middle East.
Now, if we return now to the question of Syria, the suicide bombers, such as the young woman who blew herself up in Haifa a few days ago, have nothing whatsoever to do with Syria. She was driven to desperation by the oppression of her people. Her brother and her cousin were both killed by Israeli troops. Israeli troops would not let her father through a checkpoint to go to a hospital. He suffers from a liver complaint. So this girl went and blew herself up. Well, how did Ariel Sharon, Israel's prime minister, react? By bombing Syria. Now, obviously, seeking a distraction from failures of his policies at home. President Bashar al-Assad has chosen a diplomatic and political response. He's gone to the Security Council. Now, one last word on this. The reason, in my view, that this Syria Accountability Act has now been revived and efforts are made to push it through the Congress are that Syria is on the point of signing an association agreement with the European Union. The European Union does not hold the same views about Syria that the United States government does. Now, the obvious strategy of the neocons is to try and undermine the relationship with Syria is developing with the European Union.
British journalist Patrick Seale. Seale is the author of Assad, The Struggle for the Middle East. Thanks to Democracy Now! For that segment. Well, every year, a team of student researchers and faculty at Sonoma State University in California investigates news stories that are of great importance but receive generally little attention in the mainstream American media. The group calls itself Project Censored, and it just released its 2004 yearbook of what it deems the top 25 most relevant yet underreported stories of the past year. An awards ceremony was held last weekend, co-hosted by Pacifica's Dennis Bernstein and Larry Binsky, and broadcast live on Free Speech TV. Yesterday on Peace Watch, we presented a documentary with the Project Censored co-founder, Peter Phillips, as well as a conversation between Pacifica radio host Dennis Bernstein and media democracy activist Martin Lee on the nature of censorship in American journalism. Today, we continue with our coverage of the 27th annual Project Censored Awards with this keynote speech delivered by former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney of Georgia.
I have just one question. Who are we, and who's responsible for what we've become? They say that we were hit on September 11th because we are free. Does that mean that what we've become is the product of the desires and wishes of the American people? And if so, are we also free to change our minds? As I survey the landscape of the changes that have taken place literally before my eyes over the course of my lifetime, I have to wonder, where did we go wrong? You see, I'm a child of the 60s. I saw the power possible in our country when people of all races, colors, creeds came together to move our country forward. I also saw that despite our history, the coming together was indeed possible. It was possible for white people to walk hand in hand with black people on what could easily have been termed a black issue, the right to vote in the South, as well as on an American issue, peace in Vietnam. It was possible for white people to see a black man as their leader too, and not just as someone consigned to the political margins. It was possible for black people to join with Chicanos, Puerto Ricans, Native Americans, progressive whites, to improve our country and to make us live up to our noblest ideals. Try as they may to malign flower power, It was truly star power. So how did we get from that to this? George W. smirks, Dick Cheney sneers, Rumsfeld jokes, Powell blusters, Rice lies. Enron and WorldCom steal, DynCorp vaccinates, Halliburton feeds and feeds and feeds and feeds. Americans hurt, and in Iraq, Americans die. Our national leaders insult our allies, create more foes, reward their friends, increase our insecurity through their own policies, and plunge the American people into the deepest economic abyss of a generation. Stealing an election in Florida on the uncounted chads, representing the legitimate hopes and aspirations of blacks and Latino Floridians, even the Democrats failed to pursue a remedy that would permanently secure the voting rights of people of color in Florida and around our country. Massive failures all around us enter into the calculation in any answer to my question. Who are we and who's responsible for what we've become? From the lies to our servicemen and women and to all of us about Iraq, to the still unanswered questions about September 11th, the Congress has failed in its oversight of the executive branch, and the American people have failed in their oversight of the integrity of our political system. It's abominable that Rumsfeld can say America can afford the extra $87 billion for corporate outrage and human cannon fodder in Iraq, while at the same time women and children constitute the fastest growing segment of our homeless population. The very act of our sitting vice president taking a paycheck, I can't even believe I'm saying this, taking a paycheck from the American people while at the very same time taking one from a corporation that gets billions and billions of dollars in no-bid, sole-source contracts should make us all outraged, and the vice president should blush. But these people don't blush because in the end, they know they can get away with it. I believe the promise of our country was stolen two generations ago in bold and brazen acts of violence. And our failure to appropriately respond then has led to the conditions we face today. That great experiment at togetherness and purpose that I experienced in the 60s was allowed to break down along race, class, ethnic, and religious lines. We lost our moral purpose and our national mission. We allowed others to define who we Americans really are. Those who stole our promise became America. We see ludicrous leaders like Tom DeLay, Trent Lott, Ward Connolly, and now Arnold Schwarzenegger parade across the stage adorned with the ornaments of power, while thoughtful leaders are shunned or targeted or cruelly maligned. But there was a time when that truly wasn't so. When our leaders challenged the best in us and encouraged us to shun war and invest in justice and peace. In the 60s, when John Kennedy defeated Richard Nixon, Kennedy's inaugural address set out a new vision for our country. At a time when our country had the power to extinguish poverty or to extinguish man, Kennedy chose to set our country on the path to tackle poverty and to raise the standard of freedom and liberty around the globe. In word as well as deed, Kennedy set out to make the world safe for diversity and to make America safe in a diverse world. He embarked upon a path to respect the cries of freedom from others and to make a new world order where the strong are just and the weak secure and the peace preserved. He challenged our generation to space exploration, medical achievement, arms control, and to fight against tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. And despite what the revisionists would have us believe about Kennedy, he rejected war against a smaller, weaker, poorer country, began to work for detente with the Soviets, and threatened to scatter the CIA to the four winds. Now that was leadership for a new generation. At that time, we had a choice. But Kennedy correctly pointed out that what we really wanted was not a Pax Americana imposed with American weapons of war, not even a peace for our time, but instead a peace for all time. Sniper's bullets took that America away from us. And almost in rapid succession, bullets took Martin and Bobby from us too. It came to my attention during my last days in Congress that Bobby was considering Dr. Martin Luther King to be his running mate. Now imagine the America we might have had. But when confronted with evil back then, what did we do? Not too far away from this very place, Mario Savio of Berkeley's free speech movement told us what to do. Mario Savio told us that sometimes when the machine becomes so odious, it makes us sick. And at that point, we have to put our entire bodies against the gears and the wheels and the levers, against the entire apparatus, and we have to make it stop. And that we have to say to those who own the machine that unless we're free, we'll prevent the machine from working at all. I put my entire body against the gears and the wheels and the levers, against the entire apparatus of the machine, and I tried to stop it. I tried to warn the American people of the dangers that I saw emanating from this administration. For that, a known black female Republican was advised to run against me in the Democratic primary. Republicans fed her campaign coffers, and then 48,000 of them crossed over and voted for her. Just think about it. Katherine Harris, who participated in the illegal disfranchisement of innocent black and Latino voters, was rewarded with a congressional seat, and I was taken out of one. And sometimes I wonder what the progressive community in Georgia and around the country was thinking about as I ran my race. Why was it so easy for the national Democratic political pundits who knew me to dump on me in the same manner that Sister Soldier was dumped on by the Clinton campaign? Was it that I deserved the mischaracterizations because I had dared to hold this administration accountable on the 2000 election, the missing $2.3 trillion at the Pentagon's corporate sweetheart deals with political insiders, U.S. continued use of depleted uranium in Iraq, U.S. covert activities in Africa that resulted in genocide, clear-cutting of our national forests, a return to COINTELPRO through legislation we were passing, the treatment of black people in this country. I had tried to take money away from Lockheed Martin because I feared the rampant racism that had gone unchecked. I challenged Westinghouse and their running of Savannah River site and the numerous leaks of tritium into the Savannah River. I had tried to stop the senseless weapons transfers to dictators and human rights abusers, and I authored legislation to force overseas companies to identify the names and locations of their subcontractors who might just be engaged in sweatshop labor. And I had forced the Pentagon to stop sewing its PX jeans in Burmese sweatshops. I worked with five of the Project Censored 2004 journalists on 13 of the 2004 issues and on 6 of the 2003 issues. And despite all that, I still managed to take back home to Georgia over $350 million. But it didn't matter. By the time the corporate media had finished with me, my white support had plummeted. And sadly, this was even among people whom I had represented for a decade and who knew me. I was even booed at the annual Gay Pride Parade, despite a lifetime 100% voting record. And Atlanta's white gay and lesbian leadership refused to march with me, including Georgia's only openly gay member of the legislature, whom I had endorsed, I had given a trusted staffer to manage her campaign, who I protected during redistricting when the other Democrats wanted to serve her up on a platter, a white lesbian that I helped to get elected in a majority black district. She refused to march with me too. Even some progressive journalists found it easier to join the bandwagon against me rather than to simply report accurately what I had said and done. But now we have distance from that moment. We know that this administration will do anything to have the appearance of winning an election. Florida was round one, Georgia was round two, California is round three, Texas is round four, and guess what? Those are just the stepping stones to 2004. We also now know that the administration has kept many secrets from the American people, including changing a September 11th Ground Zero environmental impact statement in order to speed up the opening of Wall Street. They've lied to us on Iraq. They still haven't told us what they knew and when they knew it about the tragic events of September 11th. And yet, they have intimidated the poor 9/11 victims' families into giving up their right to sue the perpetrators and their supporters who helped carry out the 9/11 attacks. That's why my last piece of legislation allowed the September 11th families to participate in a government compensation fund and sue, and thereby find the truth for all of us on what actually happened on that day. At the time, I even hand wrote an impeachment bill. I was so outraged. But my mother couldn't take all of the lies that were appearing in the local and the national media, and so she just begged me to leave it alone, and I did. So if there ever was a politician who had earned the right to stand before Project Censored, I think I'm it. So I'm proud to have earned my spot tonight, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for inviting me to participate. But although we're all losers as a result of what happened in Georgia and Florida, we're really losers if a little black ink can sow hatred and division between progressive blacks and whites, even in the South. Now, before I sit down, I want to go back to that question that I asked. Who are we and who's responsible for what we've become? America is us, and we're responsible for what we've become. If we answer in any other way, we're content to have others define us, even others who have proven to us that they can't be trusted. A young teacher recently asked me, what did I think she could do to advance the cause of people who think like us? I told her that the greatest gift my teachers had given me was the ability to think. Teaching our young people how to think is the greatest gift our teachers can give, for it's the independent thinkers who will save our country. So my hat's off to the professors at Sumona State for even conceiving such a program, and to the university for being committed to it. Project Censored ensures that our country will have a cadre of young people trained to think. And for those of us who care enough about our country to find out what's going on, Project Censored makes it easier for us to know so that we can make for our country a better tomorrow.
Former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney of Georgia delivered the keynote speech at last weekend's 27th annual Project Censored Awards at Sonoma State University. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.